From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Was there a deliberate attempt by your administration to hide what was happening at Quincy?
Absolutely not. Our team did everything they could to make sure that our veterans were kept safe and their health care was protected.
How did you defend the decision to take out toilets out of your property for tax exemptions?
We followed the rules, but let's step back here for a moment and recognize that this was an internal memo that was leaked for political purposes about problems in the assessor's office.
Mr. Pritzker, do you believe those schemes deserve to be prosecuted? Yes or no, and why?
Governor Rauner, this was a leaked memo. The fact is that we abided by the rules.
And
And we made sure.
You sent the money back because you got caught.
Governor Rauner, you bought a company in Willowbrook, Illinois, in DuPage County, Sterigenics. This is a company that the EPA has now determined emits gas that causes cancer. Children are sick. What do you have to say to them?
Mr. Pritzker, I do not have any economic interest in that company whatsoever.
Did you buy it?
So that is a false, and that is a lie.
Did you own it?
That company I had an indirect ownership interest in that ended in May,
the entity that
in May of 2015.
Bruce Rauner and J.B. Pritzker went at it during the most recent debate. The candidates for Illinois governor made some news this week, and not much of it positive. We're about a month away from Election Day. We'll recap the week and see what might be resonating with the voters. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel for State Week includes Charlie Wheeler. He's here in studio with us. Charlie is director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also in studio is NPR Illinois Statehouse reporter Daisy Contreras. And joining us from Chicago today is WBEZ's government and political reporter Dave McKinney. And Dave, it's good to have you on once again.
Oh, thanks, Sean.
So, Daisy, I'll start with you. Both of the candidates getting some negative headlines this week. Before we go any further, The two big stories that seem to get the most attention, can you recap those for us real quick?
Yeah, I mean, Sean, the biggest takeaway that after this week, we have two gubernatorial candidates calling each other criminals. And like you said, 30 days before Election Day, it wasn't a good week for either one. Cook County Inspector General's report came out claiming J.B. Pritzker received $330,000 in property tax breaks for one of his mansions as part of a, quote, scheme to defraud taxpayers. The story goes that Pritzker had the toilets removed from his home so that it could be declared inhabitable and qualify for these breaks. Pritzker claims he did everything by the book and says the Cook County Inspector General's report was leaked and that it's a political move, as we heard earlier, on behalf of the Rauner camp. Pritzker has agreed to repay the money. He claims he's doing it so that the issue does not distract from the race. On the other hand, Governor Rauner is still dealing with the aftermath of what happened at the veterans' home in Quincy, where 14 people died after getting sick with Legionnaires. Attorney General Lisa Madigan has opened a criminal and civil investigation into Rauner's administration's handling of the issues at the home. There are various questions and concerns over how residents, family, and staff were notified. There's the question if the Rauner administration intentionally stalled in notifying people, although Rauner claims everything was done with the residents' well-being in mind. So now Rauner is calling the Attorney General's investigation a political response to distract from Pritzker's property tax controversy.
Well, we'll talk about that Pritzker controversy in just a little bit here, but let's turn this over now to Dave McKinney. Dave, you and Tony Arnold of WBEZ breaking the latest story. You've been covering this veterans' home issue quite a bit, and you had the latest story this week, really raising some more questions about the response from the Rauner administration when it became known that there was a problem with Legionnaires' disease.
Yeah, I mean, what we were able to document really by going through thousands upon thousands of emails that we've gotten from the administration. I mean, I think we're up to close to 50,000 emails. We were able to establish a pattern here where not only in 2015, but in later outbreaks in 2016 and 2017, where they seemed like they were slow in announcing new cases, and in some cases they didn't make any announcement at all about them. And I think that has sort of, you know, now kind of put this into a different dimension a little bit, because you had people, you know, getting sick and dying in 2015, and certainly families of those victims contend that they didn't know anything about what was going on in the home at the time. And now we see other cases. And so that really has put Rauner on the defensive this week. And it you know, the story, I don't know if it triggered the announcement by the Attorney General, but it was out there before that. And I think, you know, her, you know, what she's says she's looking into anyway is this whole issue of notification.
Also, if notification wasn't being made or not being made in as timely of a manner as it should be, is there any indication, any link there that this made the problem worse?
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the experts we talked to at Johns Hopkins, you know, they told us that, you know, the problem is this is a treatable disease. If people know about it ahead of time, if they know it's out there, the minute somebody starts with a cough even, you know, that's when you can look seriously at do they have Legionnaires? Because what, you know, Legionnaires, if you catch it early enough, you can treat it with antibiotics and a lot of times be successful. You know, of course, in a nursing home environment, which a big chunk of this facility is, these people are highly vulnerable. And you know, the way you contract this is breathing in vapors, you know. So if you're in a shower or if you're in a whirlpool, which of course a lot of these older folks do every day, that's how they acquire this. And a lot of them have weakened immune systems. So it does make it worse if there's not, you know, a recognition of it. And you know, honestly, in 2017, what we saw, and we reported on this earlier, but we looked a little more deeper into it. In March, in May, and in September of 2017, there were individual cases that were confirmed to be Legionnaires at Quincy, and yet there was no mention of that at all by the state when any of these cases popped up. Their defense was, well, these are individual cases. They're not part of a cluster. You know, we don't consider that, I guess, meritorious. But when you're dealing with a facility like Quincy with these problems, every single case matters. And it demonstrates that, you know, this system that they've spent millions of dollars there, the water system, to purify is not doing its job.
Charlie, when we hear these types of stories, I mean, I think of state government and any government really in general that problems are going to crop up. There are going to be things you have to deal with. But the problem seems to be for the Rauner administration, and I think these stories are bearing this out, that how it's been handled is where the question really comes in. It's not so much that, you know, that Bruce Rauner is to blame for an old plumbing system and the Legionella bacteria, which can, you know, which is not terribly uncommon. We see it show up in other places as well. But in this type of setting, when you know you've got this problem, it's how you deal with it.
Yeah, and I think the fact that Dave alluded to, well, it's just a case here and there, you step back and say, well, how did this person acquire it? How do you get Legionnaires' disease? Why, it's through the bacteria that's in the water system. So if Charlie Wheeler gets it, maybe it's possible that Daisy Contreras or Dave McKinney might get it also. So we should, at the minimum, let their relatives know, hey, there's something going on here, and you might want to find alternate housing for your loved one. And apparently, at least from the stories that I've seen that Dave and Tony have reported on, there was kind of an attitude in the Rauner administration, well, let's not say anything. Let's wait and see if any reporters ask us about this.
Well, Dave, there's indication from what I've seen in the past that they were trying to deal with it. It wasn't as though they were just always saying, let's don't do anything. They have taken some steps there. So is it just more of a notification problem, or is it the fact that they weren't doing enough?
Well, I think certainly there have been a lot of people that have put a lot of hours into trying to address this problem. And you know, I think the real problem is in 2015, the state was really caught flat-footed to this. There didn't appear to be any sort of you know, contingency or planning for an event like this. And so they didn't have a prototype to follow. And that's crazy in a way, because there have been outbreaks like this in plenty of other facilities that, you know, including Veterans Home. There was a big outbreak in a Pittsburgh facility. Well, the one other thing I neglected to mention about the reporting this week that I think is significant is in that first period of time when there was not, you know, a prompt notice of, you know, when they knew they had an epidemic and when they told the families. We found an email that came out of the governor's office. His deputy press secretary was basically telling the staffs at the Department of Veteran Affairs and the Department of Public Health, which were the two frontline agencies dealing with all this at that time, to hold off on putting out a press release because they wanted to, as Charlie mentioned, let's see if we get any reporter inquiries. Now, this was in day four of that 6-day period of time when they weren't talking about it. And I think, you know, what's significant about it is it takes this decision making directly into the governor's office. And the source that I talked about at Johns Hopkins, I mean, he said, you know, when you get into these public health crises, politicians have to stay in their own lanes. They can't be the ones dictating, you know, how to respond to a crisis like this, because their tendency is to deal with matters like they're a political crisis. And here what you had instead was a crisis of life and death.
Would you agree with that, Charlie?
Oh, yeah. And as I was saying earlier, there was some concern from what I've read that, well, we don't want to, you know, panic people. But on the other hand, they didn't even tell the folks on staff that this was occurring as I read the reports. So, yeah, I think they had more concern about the image and how they were being perceived than they did to do what... Were I in charge, I would have told them to do, you know, notify people. Let's see if we can get somewhere else to house these folks until we can get the situation corrected.
I mean, another thing to bear in mind with all of this, too, particularly when you mention the staff. I mean, one of these emails that we found from early September of 2015, there's some discussion in the public health department about how to respond to questions that are coming out of the union. Their members are on the front lines here. They're dealing with these sick patients, and in some cases they themselves are getting sick. I mean, you know, we know of an instance where one employee was hospitalized and you know, on a ventilator for a while, and they come to the state and they're like, what is your plan to deal with this? How safe is our workplace? And the email that we wind up seeing here, it goes all the way up in the food chain in the public health department to the director, Nirav Shah. And he says, you know, that's not our job to be weighing in here. And you look at a document like that kind of with the benefit of hindsight, and you wonder, well, if you're the public health director, what is your job? You know information about what the situation is at that facility and how safe it is and what is being done to contain the illness. And here, instead, rather than providing, you know, the detailed information that the union was wanting, they instead opted to refer to the governor's office for information. And this also came at a time, remember, when the governor and AFSCME were in a particularly pitched battle about legislation that Rauner had vetoed that would have, you know, imposed mandatory arbitration on the contract impasse they had, and it would have it would have prevented a lockout. And it was coming right at the time that there was a big push in the Illinois House to override that. And that override, of course, fell short. But you have this antagonism between Rauner and the union. And the union is kind of coming at them in a different channel and saying, you know, we need help here in figuring out what's going on. And they didn't feel as if they got that.
Well, Dave mentioned earlier, Daisy, that there is an investigation now that apparently has been launched by the Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan, of course, a Democrat and the daughter of the House Speaker and a pretty much constant foe of Bruce Rauner, Michael Madigan. That investigation, we don't know. You know, investigations can be opened a lot of times and nothing is found. So we don't know what to make of that exactly at this point, but certainly there are people who are thinking that this is political.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Governor Rauner called out, you know, the investigation as a political response to take voter attention from Pritzker's property tax issue. And throughout the campaign, Governor Rauner has called Pritzker Madigan's puppet. So now that we have Attorney General Lisa Madigan, who you said, you know, Sean, that she's daughter of Madigan, Michael Madigan. So, yeah, it's a political move, especially with 30 days before election.
And we heard earlier, of course, about J.B. Pritzker's issues this week and what came to light. Dave, I know this is, of course, has been in the news a lot, have been in a lot of ads as well over whether or not J.B. Pritzker was able to benefit from this, you know, pulling these toilets out of this mansion and not paying these property taxes under that scenario there. Is this getting a lot of attention? Is it getting a lot of play in the Chicago area at least?
Well, I mean, you know, certainly the Republicans and Rauner have made this a focal point over the last few days. I mean, as the open showed, I mean, the governor made this a big issue and called out Pritzker, you know, on the mat during the second debate. I think the Republicans are trying to scramble and put as much pressure as they can on Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox to investigate this, because the report that came out from the Cook County Inspector General, you know, basically argued that the way in which this property tax appeal was presented to the county assessor, that was tantamount to fraud, and it defrauded Cook County taxpayers, and so the logical next step then would be if that in fact was the case. I mean, Pritzker has denied it. He has said that they followed all the rules and that the lawyers that were handling this adhered to the rules at the time. The next step is, what is Fox going to do? Because she represents Cook County. And we saw a little bit of movement on Thursday from her office. She said that the matter is in the hands of the Special Prosecutions Unit in her office. But what's striking about that statement is it's vague, and it doesn't really say for certain that there is a full-bore investigation underway within her office toward this.
Well, I've heard this certainly online a lot this week, where people are saying, well, if you know, and these come from J.B. Pritzker supporters saying, you know, J.B. Pritzker, yeah, okay, maybe there was something there. He saved, you know, saved himself some money on the property taxes. Maybe it wasn't the best thing to do, but it's not the same as these deaths at the veterans' home. And I get that thing as well. But this report, Charlie, that came out said basically that that Pritzker had engaged in a scheme to defraud taxpayers. Now, when you're running to be governor of the state of Illinois, that's not what people want to hear a month before the election, that this guy could very well be the next governor of Illinois. And here, I think his integrity is being called into question a bit.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, in the debate, Governor Rauner attempted to say several times a number of prior governors have gone to jail, and, you know, if Pritzker is elected, would he be the next? And it really looks bad. If you step back, some of the comments have been inaccurate, though, because I think it was Representative Jeannie Ives from Wheaton, who challenged Rauner and lost, said that this was hurting the school children or something like that, suggesting that the money that Pritzker didn't pay was denied to the bodies that levy the property taxes. Well, that's not accurate. That's not how property taxes work. If somebody pays less, that means everybody else pays a little more. The taxing body gets the amount that it asks for. How it's divided among the property tax payers within its district's boundaries depends on the value of the property. So if somebody's value goes down, everybody else pays a little more. There's something like 5 million residents in Cook County, according to the 2010 census. And Pritzker, over 5 years, didn't pay, the argument would be, roughly $331,000 in property taxes. So that comes out to about $66,000 a year. And if you spread that over the number of taxpayers in Cook County, it's only a few cents more for each individual tax bill. But it's the notion of that here's a guy who's, you know, richer than King Midas, and he still feels the need to fudge a little bit to try and save himself what to him would be pocket change. I mean, $330,000 to all of us that's a heck of a lot of money. That's what we'll earn in maybe 5 years. But for a guy like Pritzker, it's nothing.
Yeah, and I don't know anybody that wants to pay even a few more pennies toward their property tax. So, Daisy, is this this doesn't look good for him necessarily. We know that. Is he doing enough by saying he's going to repay this money or pay this money anyway, $330,000 he's going to write a check for? Is that enough from, you think, a voter perspective to sort of get him off the hook here?
Not sure from the voter perspective, but Rauner has definitely used that as an opportunity to criticize him and telling him, you know, you're paying this back or you're giving this money back, so you are acknowledging that you did wrong. Voters, over the last few weeks, we've seen a flurry of polls coming out, numbers showing that Pritzker is ahead of Rauner by at least 20 percentage points. They all kind of are a little bit different, but yeah, he's leading, and will it matter? Will, after this debate that we had earlier this week, will it matter to voters? Will it change how voters are feeling? A recent AARP poll came out saying that Illinois voters are upset with the way the General Assembly has been handling government, the way the current governor has handled government. There, a lot of them are considering leaving the state, and I think that we've heard these, a lot of people saying this over the last years. After we had a budget impasse, people aren't happy with their job prospects, education. So will it matter? I'm not sure.
Well, here we are.
I thought it was interesting. Yep. The headline on the Tribune story today of the kind of dueling press conferences that the two candidates had, I believe it was on Thursday, where they suggested the other one should go to jail. And the Trib's head says, governor candidates joust over deaths versus tax breaks.
Death and taxes.
Yeah, maybe that's what's in voters' minds.
Well, Dave, most of the votes are in the Chicago region, of course. But up there, there's a lot more interest probably in the upcoming mayor's race, even though that's a few months off before that election. Has this governor's race, I mean the governor's contest, has it moved to the back burner a bit on most voters' minds there? Is it still, on front page news?
Well, I think when Mayor Emanuel announced a few weeks back that he wasn't going to run again, I mean, it really sucked the oxygen out of the, the state political arena. And I mean, I think pretty much Pritzker and Rauner, took a week off or so because there was just no way to break through it. I mean, it's kind of, I think, gone back into the background a little bit more. And with these debates with Pritzker and Rauner, I mean, I think the focus is back on the governor's race right now. But again, it just, the way these polls are looking, it has this feeling of kind of a one-sided affair at the moment. And, and again, I don't particularly trust polls in general, but when you see them stacked up, three since August that have Pritzker with double-digit leads, there's a lot of work that Rauner would seem to have to do to try to get back into the ballgame. It seems like, it's the eighth inning and he's down by five runs.
Well, Charlie, you mentioned Jeannie Ives coming out, kind of going on the attack against Pritzker this week. That's something that some people have felt could help Rauner, could help bring some of that base back to him, saying that, well, I'm not necessarily a Bruce Rauner fan if you're a hardcore conservative. Maybe you haven't liked some of the things he's done, but he may be better than the other guy. That he needs that, certainly.
Oh, yeah. The problem that the governor has is that he's not only is he trailing in the polls, but he's also underwater in terms of whether people like him or not. His favorable rating is really poor. So his best move, I think, would be to try and tear down Pritzker, and this tax evasion charge could very well do that. But as we were talking about whether or not the mayor's race is sucking away, I'm thinking, well, what else is going on nationally that might, and in Chicago, that might tend to draw people's focus away from thinking about the election? Well, for one thing, the jury has begun deliberations on the case of Jason Van Dyke, the police officer charged with murder and other serious charges for shooting a young black teenager. You also have, at the national level, all the drama surrounding whether or not Brett Kavanaugh will be our next U.S. Supreme Court justice. So there's a lot to compete with people who are busy, have other things going on in their life, and maybe don't have the time to sit back and reflect about, well, who should our next governor be? Should we have the guy who let people die at the veterans home, or should we have the guy who pulls toilets to cheat on taxes? Or maybe Sam McCann. Mm-hmm. Hey, he's a conservative. He voted against all the things that I don't like about Bruce Rauner having signed, which Mike Madigan also pushed through the House,
Mm-hmm. And adding to that, what you just said about Sam McCann, he had, he was upset that he was not going to be included in this last gubernatorial debate. I mean, Sam McCann is the Conservative Party candidate for governor and Libertarian candidate Cash Jackson. They were both excluded from this last debate, and they actually took part in the first debate. And with Rauner trying to looking into getting more of those Republican voters who were upset with him from the very beginning and who voted for Jeannie Ives, this might work out for Rauner, not having Sam McCann on stage with him, trying to get those voters away from him.
Charlie, when you made the point earlier about how one of the cross currents working against Rauner is just the general likability. Polls showing that his numbers are not where they should be. When the poll that came out this week from Southern Illinois University's Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, man, that's a mouthful. The one number that stood out to me that you know, I still can't quite get my arms around is how in the collar counties, the Republican candidate Rauner is down to the, you know, the Democratic nominee Pritzker by 30 points.
Yeah.
And it has not been that long ago that, you know, you would look at the collar counties and the suburbs as being kind of a bastion for Republicans. And of course, since the mid-90s, they've been trending more Democrat. But 30 points is enormous, because that then means that in order to compete, Rauner has to really drive up his numbers downstate. And, you know, the numbers in this poll anyway show that he and Pritzker are basically in a dead heat downstate. So the pathways for Rauner to pull this off, you know, it's hard to kind of see how he does it.
Yeah, and when you think about it, what percentage of the state's total voting population live outside the six-county Chicago area?
Mm-hmm.
There's not many people there for him to draw on, and if he's only breaking even, I mean, it doesn't look good.
And think about it, J.B. Pritzker to have this big lead in most of these polls, and here's a guy that's never held political office. And to be honest, I don't think most people really know that much about him. I don't think he's somebody who has built a reputation and everybody says, this fellow is really the guy, and look what he's done elsewhere. That really is more of a referendum to me on Bruce Rauner.
Yeah, and that's like deja vu all over again, as the late Yogi Berra would say, because that's exactly what happened 4 years ago. Pat Quinn had a record. Challenger Bruce Rauner, who was pretty much an unknown at that point, contended that Quinn was a failed governor, and therefore you need to elect me because I'm a businessman. And I think he also said something along the lines, and if I don't get the job done, you can vote me out in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are people now who are arguing, well, you actually are a bigger flop than Pat Quinn. So, yeah, we'll take our chance on J.B. Pritzker. We don't know much about him, but what we do know is that we don't like you.
Be careful what you
say,
I guess.
And then from that same poll, real quick, that same poll actually says that Democrats are a little bit more enthusiastic to mm-hmm. come out and vote this fall.
Certainly in Illinois, we're
yeah.
seeing that. Mm-hmm. So, Daisy, I'm going to start with you. Our notes from the field.
Yeah, so attorney generals, candidates for attorney general are getting together today or Friday at a forum to talk about the race and where they stand. And because of the record spending campaigns for governor that we've been seeing, polls have also shown that statewide races are being overshadowed by these gubernatorial races. So this lack of visibility is showing in polls for attorney general, where voters are unsure about what the candidates stand for.
Okay. Charlie?
Well, the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs came out with a flash index compiled by Professor J. Fred Geertz, and the index has gone up for the third consecutive month, and it's the highest reading since May of 2016. At 105.2, and it measures the strength of the Illinois economy, and Professor Geertz says the unemployment rate is down. It's almost the lowest on record, and the economy is kind of humming along.
All right. Members of our broadcast today included Charlie Wheeler, Daisy Contreras, and Dave McKinney from WBEZ. You can get a podcast of our show. It's available at nprillinois.org. You can also find us on NPR One. Just look for State Week. Production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.